It's 6 hours, what's the universal time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman reporting. And the U.S. worshipers returned to the Charleston, South Carolina church on Sunday for the first service since a white man gunned down a Bible study group at a historic African-American church last week. Visiting minister Reverend Norvell Goff stood in the end for pastor of the Emmanuel AME Church, Clementa Pinky, who was among the nine killed.
The doors of Mother Emmanuel is open on this Sunday. It sends a message to every demon in hell and on earth.
BOA's Amanda Scott was inside Mother Emmanuel for that Sunday service.
You could see people consoling each other, particularly the members of the congregation who are still dealing with the loss. But overall, you know, just from the sermons and just from the songs, it was definitely uplifting. And they wanted to lift the mood and lift the spirits and show their appreciation for the city as a whole for how they've come together amidst this tragedy.
The suspect in the mass shooting, Dylan Roof, is jailed in Charleston after being charged with 9 counts of murder and 1 count of criminal possession of a firearm. Sunday in Somalia, at least 3 Al-Shabaab militants were killed during an assault on a national intelligence training base in the capital, Mogadishu. The militants set off a car bomb outside the base before launching their raid. Internal Security Agency spokesman Mohammed Yusuf says Somali forces were aware in advance of the planned attack and managed to block it. The Al-Qaeda-linked group later claimed responsibility. Al-Shabaab has lost territory since the start of a military offensive against it, but it continues to keep up its attacks. This is VOA News. U.S. Defense Chief Ashton Carter visits Europe this week to urge NATO allies to adopt a new kind of threat because of the threat of Russia in the east and the Islamic State militants in the south. U.S. officials say Mr. Carter will urge NATO to dispose of the Cold War playbook following the Kremlin's annexation of Crimea and its military support for Ukrainian separatists. NATO leaders are expected to consider providing ministry-level advice and other training assistance in Iraq. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif is to meet several and his European Union counterparts today before the June 30th deadline for an international accord on Tehran's nuclear program. Final round of talks on the Iranian nuclear program are to begin later in the week. Iran reached a framework nuclear deal with the United States, with Russia, China, France, Britain, and Germany back on April 2nd. Parties are aiming for a final agreement in which Iran would restrict its nuclear program in exchange for relief from economic sanctions. Thousands of demonstrators marched Sunday in European cities in a show of anti-austerity solidarity on the eve of an emergency summit aimed at keeping the debt-ridden Greek government from defaulting on its European loan payments. Without a deal, Greece is expected to default on a $1.8 billion loan repayment to the International Monetary Fund, setting the stage for its possible departure from the 19-nation eurozone. IMF Chief Christine Lagarde.
In each and every review that we have done of Greece for the last 5 years, we have always showed flexibility. It's never been exactly the same as what was expected under the review. And we will continue to operate on that basis.
A statement on Sunday from the Athens government press office said that Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras offered a proposal for a mutually beneficial agreement providing a permanent solution to the standoff over the country's debt. It did not provide any details. Today's summit was called for after multinational talks about terms of the ongoing Greek bailout collapsed last week over Athens' refusal to adopt new austerity measures. Pope Francis said Sunday the plight of migrants seeking to escape war and poverty in North Africa and the Middle East brings tears to his eyes.
Tante persone si sono impoverite e hanno problemi con la.
Speaking to a group of laborers in the Italian city of Turin, the Pope said the migrants, mostly from the Middle East and Africa, should not be blamed, calling them victims of inequality and war. His comments came as European Union ministers discuss who is to take care of the more than 100,000 refugees who have arrived on European shores via Italy since January. Get more news by going to our website at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, June 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is the deadline for the South African government to explain who allowed President Bashir of Sudan to leave the country despite a court order.
Our own government, our president, and several of our ministers of state conspired to allow President al-Bashir to leave the country in defiance of that court order.
James Self is the chairperson of the Opposition Democratic Alliance's federal executive. The U.S. Congress is set to extend the AGOA trade agreement for another 10 years. A northern Nigerian university benefits from a free internet. And Somali extremists Sunday attack a government compound in Mogadishu.
The attackers arrived outside the compound in an explosive-laden vehicle, detonating the car outside the intelligence training base in Shibis district.
That's VOA Abdulaziz Bello in Mogadishu. Worshippers attend Emmanuel AME's first service since last week's deadly shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. And we'll hear the viewpoint of a white separatist group on the shooting. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Monday, is the deadline of the seven-day ultimatum given by a South African court for the government to provide explanation how and why Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir was able to leave the country despite a court order barring him from leaving. Meanwhile, South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance has called on the country's public prosecutor to investigate why the government failed to arrest Mr. Bashir. James Self is chairperson of the Opposition Democratic Alliance's federal executive. He said there is evidence of an elaborate and well-coordinated plot by President Jacob Zuma's office and the security to facilitate President Bashir's departure.
But there are very serious issues at stake here, not only because as a signatory of the Rome Statute, and one of the countries that has incorporated that statute into our domestic law, we allowed President al-Bashir into the country. We did not arrest him. We did not give him up to the International Criminal Court. But even more seriously, our courts made an order that he should not leave the country until we had established whether or not he deserved to be arrested, and our own government, our president, and several of our ministers of state conspired to allow President al-Bashir to leave the country in defiance of that court order.
Do you have evidence that there was a coordinated plot?
Well, it seems common cause that a number of ministers in Jacob Zuma's government gathered to arrange the safe exit of President al-Bashir out of the country, despite the fact that there was a warrant out for his arrest from the ICC, and despite the fact that a domestic court order had ordered that he should remain in the country until such time as it could be determined whether or not he could leave the country.
As you know, the South African government is supposed to respond to a court order which gave the government 7 days to respond. And this is coming up today, Monday morning. Why can't you wait until you hear the South African government side?
Well, we certainly will be waiting for their response. But in the meantime, we have called for, and it has been granted, for an urgent debate in the South African Parliament that is taking place on Tuesday. And on that occasion, we will demand answers of the South African government and its ministers about how it was possible that President al-Bashir was allowed to leave the country and what the government was thinking of in defying both international and domestic law in that situation.
As you know, sir, according to, I think, the African Union and even the South African government, all presidents that came to attend this summit were granted immunity. How would you want President Bashir to still be arrested, even if a court order it?
Well, the fact of the matter that is, in terms of our domestic law, is so that despite the fact that one is a president or a minister or a member of parliament, that does not grant one immunity from prosecution in terms of our understanding of the Rome Statute in its applicability in South African law.
James Self is chairperson of the Opposition Democratic Alliance's Federal Executive. You are speaking with me from Cape Town, South Africa. At least three militants died as an Al-Qaeda-linked extremist group attacked an intelligence training facility on Sunday in Mogadishu. Abdulaziz Bello reports for VOA from the Somali capital.
Gunmen from the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab failed in a bid to launch a deadly attack inside one of the intelligence training bases in Mogadishu. The attackers arrived outside the compound in an explosive-laden vehicle, detonating the car outside the intelligence training base in Shibis district. Police say the two gunmen apparently lost their way and were attacking a civilian house close to their target when they were shot and killed. National Security Ministry spokesman Mohammed Yusuf said the government had intelligence that helped in foiling the attack early Sunday. He said that since the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, security personnel have been deployed on major roads of the capital. He said the attackers tried to use an alternative route but were foiled by intelligence forces. Al-Shabaab recently vowed to increase its attacks against the country's federal government and its allies as a part of its so-called Ramadan offensive. The group has in the past attacked government officials, institutions, security personnel, United Nations organizations, foreign embassies, and African Union troops. The government is warning young people not to be used by terrorist groups. Spokesman Yusuf said Al-Shabaab continues to persuade youth to carry out deadly attacks, especially during Ramadan. An Al-Shabaab attack killed almost a dozen security personnel Saturday in Afgoe town, 30 kilometers southwest of the capital. Abdulaziz Bilo for VOA News, Mogadishu.
The U.S. Congress is well on its way to extending the African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, for another 10 years. The House of Representatives and the Senate have both passed versions of the bill, and all that remains before President Obama can sign it is for the two houses to work out their differences between the two versions. Mariam Andiello reports on what this means for the future of AGOA, which was set to expire at the end of September this year.
The trade provision that allows thousands of products from African countries to enter the U.S. tax-free was approved by the House of Representatives in a 397-32 vote.
The motion is adopted without objection.
Fred Oladende is the chairman of the U.S.-based AGOA Civil Society Organization Network.
I think it allows all of the stakeholders to see AGOA as a vehicle for long-term economic development.
Oladende says to use AGOA as a tool for development, African countries have to look beyond the energy, apparel, and textile sectors. A regional approach for other primary products like mangoes, for example, is a must.
So a lot of mangoes out of Mali, but couldn't come in because of the stringent sanitary and phytosanitary requirements. We want to meet those requirements, but even when we have met those requirements, we also want to see how we could take those mangoes, add value to it, where we can can them, where we can pasteurize them.
The African Diplomatic Corps in Washington strongly supports renewal, but Senegalese Ambassador to the U.S., Babacar Diagne, says more changes are needed to get the full benefit of AGOA.
I must say I'm still a little bit frustrated. You know what? About 39 eligible countries, just 7 or 8 are taking profit from AGOA. So we have to fight for the renewal, of course, but we also have to put a special focus on training business people in our countries to, let's say, make them meet the criteria required to profit from AGOA.
Ivory Coast has been in and out of AGOA, exporting cocoa, coffee, cashews, and textile apparel to the U.S. Its ambassador, Dauda Jabate, says he hopes the renewal will expand exports to the U.S.
To be frank, we want our trade capacity to be increased because, you know, everybody is saying, oh, AGOA, but most of the time, some country cannot make a huge exploitation of this opportunity that has been given to them.
Florizel Lizer, the U.S. Assistant Trade Representative for Africa, recently said AGOA has had successes but can do more.
There's been a tripling of non-oil exports to the United States. It's created a lot of jobs. We've seen investment go into Africa. But at the same time, if you look at how much came into the United States in non-oil exports last year, it's like $4.9 billion. That's it, from all of sub-Saharan Africa.
She said the hope is that in the next decade, AGOA will be used to its full potential so that it can help Africa maximize development. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 22nd, Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. In Nigeria, more than 100 million people are not connected to the internet because of poor infrastructure and on the few networks that offer the service, it is expensive and unreliable. A new project has come up to give people, especially university students, a resource for offline viewing at no cost. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Zaria in northern Nigeria.
What we have in front of you now is e-granary. You understand?
Yeah. A computer instructor in Ahmadu Bello University in Zaria, northern Nigeria, is taking a first-year student through the use of an offline library. The offline e-granary digital library is an innovative technology developed by a U.S.-based non-profit organization called the WiderNet. The offline library provides digital educational resources to institutions like Ahmadu Bello University, which lacks adequate internet access. Kasa Mathias, head of the database unit of the university, says the students can access tens of thousands of educational materials without much problem.
We are interested in sensitizing our students, especially undergraduates. We give them the background information on the available databases that they can use for their research work, their assignments, especially projects, yes, and sometimes to even carry them through, sensitize them on new databases that are available for them.
First-year student of archaeology Ibitoye Idowu says easy access to university reading material, documents and journals has made learning easy for him.
You find some website that you can't get enough information. Some information are just even off what you are looking for. Now, even it makes reading easier for me. Just coming down here, I'll be able to get what I want and go through it. I will understand even better than, because, you know, it's not every lecturer that knows how to really express what he has.
The innovation puts millions of digital academic documents, multimedia work and websites onto a server in the university. The information is then available to students at no cost, whether there is internet or not. The students' hunger for reading material might be met for now, but still there are complaints about power outages.
So he wants to stabilize, so the thing goes off. But it's not a problem. We are sorry, but it's one of those challenges that we always have.
As Matthias was taking a student through the process of accessing information without the internet, power went off. The student Idowu spoke of his frustration.
The only challenge I'm having here is the power supply. Sometimes it will just go off, and sometimes it will just come about five times consecutively like that. It will just be going off. Yeah, it seems very, very frustrating sometimes.
The head of the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department, Professor Mohamed Mwazu, says his institution has spent heavily on access of information made readily available for 40,000 students and staff at the university. The offline digital library, founded in 2001, is connected in more than 1,000 schools, clinics and universities in Africa, Southeast Asia and many other countries. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Zaria, northern Nigeria.
A Charleston African-American church has reopened with an emotional service 4 days after a 21-year-old white man killed the senior pastor and 8 others in a racially motivated shooting. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski was there.
No weapon formed against us shall prosper. Quoting from the book of Isaiah, Reverend Norvell Goff told the congregation at the church, affectionately known as Mother Emmanuel, that their prayers were a triumph over evil.
The doors of Mother Emmanuel is open on this Sunday. It sends a message to every demon in hell and on earth.
The intense worship went on for hours, while outside, people came from far and wide to listen.
When I'm tired, he makes me strong.
Elsewhere in the city, they also paid tribute. In song,
through the storm, he is Lord.
And in contemplation. As the belfries across this so-called holy city tolled at the appointed hour. And at Mother Emmanuel, the congregants finally emerged, their faith strengthened amid the sorrow.
I honestly felt that God's presence was there. And even I felt a genuineness that he was really believing that God was going to take care of all of us.
It's a very sad day in America. It's a sad day in South Carolina. That's a sad day in Charleston. And as a result, we come together in a race of people.
The solidarity shown today clearly means a lot to this devastated congregation. But the ultimate test will be the support they get in the days and weeks and even years to come. Jerome Sokolowski, VOA News, Charleston, South Carolina.
Last week's shooting of 9 African-Americans during a Bible study session at a historic African-American church in the southern U.S. city of Charleston marked one of the most notorious attacks on a black church in the South since the 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. In an online racist manifesto, Dalen Roof, the alleged shooter showed a deep hatred of minorities, particularly blacks. Henry Wolf is spokesman for the Council of Conservative Citizens, an American political organization that supports white nationalism and separatism. Wolf says while the council unequivocally condemns Roof's murderous actions, it, however, emphasizes the danger of denying the extent of black-on-white crime.
This was a horrible, unforgivable crime, and we condemn it in the strongest possible terms. I think that what we now have to think about is how do we prevent something like this happening again? And I believe the worst thing we can do is what I'm hearing most frequently all the time, and that is that we must reemphasize America's history of slavery, of racism, of lynching, of Jim Crow, because especially young people like this Dalen Roof, they had no hand in any of that. And if all they hear is white people are bad, white people are bad, it makes them very angry, and I think in some cases it drives them to this kind of murderous violence.
Is it true that Mr. Dalen Roof, the guy who allegedly committed this act, cited your organization as the organization that first drew his attention to what he called black-on-white crime?
That's correct. That's what he says in his manifesto. Now, our organization has had no contact with this man whatsoever, and no one in our organization had ever heard of him before this terrible crime took place.
You say in your press release that you unequivocally condemn Roof's murderous action, but yet you say the council emphasizes the danger of denying the extent of black-on-white crime. What are you saying?
Well, for example, in 2011, that's the most recent year for which we have statistics, there were 520,000 interracial crimes involving blacks and white. Of that number, 83%, that's 429,000 crimes, were committed by blacks against whites, whereas in that same year, whites committed only 17% of those crimes. So you see, of all of the interracial crimes of violence in the United States, the huge majority are committed by blacks against white. But no one in the United States wants to talk about this. I believe that Dalen Roof was very, very upset about this.
Tell me, sir, what is the philosophy of your organization? What do you preach?
We preach a realistic understanding of race. And An aspect of that realistic understanding is that, by and large, people prefer the company of people like themselves.
But yes. That would be un-American, considering that the United States is a multiracial country.
Well, I'm not talking about complete separation, but the government should realize that, by and large, people do not prefer to be forced into contact with people whom they don't choose. If you look at a church, for example, 90% of the churches in the United States are at least 85% one race, and many are 100% one race. This is because when people are left to choose entirely as they wish, they do not seek out diversity. They tend to prefer homogeneity. And the idea that diversity is a strength is simply not borne out by the evidence.
Henry Wolf is the spokesman for the Council of Conservative Citizens. He was speaking with me from Oakton, Virginia, near Washington, D.C. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Mali beat Senegal 3-1 to clinch the bronze medal at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Auckland, New Zealand on Saturday, while Serbia edged Brazil 2-1 in extra time to win the contest. Elsewhere, China pipped Cameroon 1-0 at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Edmonton, Canada to deny the Africans a place in the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, Mauritania edged Sierra Leone 2-1. Morocco beat defending champions Libya 3-0 in 2016 Orange Africa Nations Championship qualifiers on Sunday night. Djibouti and Burundi drew 1-1. Ethiopia beat Kenya 2-0. Lesotho and Botswana drew 0-0. Namibia edged Zambia 2-1. Zimbabwe beat Comoro Islands 2-0 as Swaziland and Angola drew 2-2. Earlier on Saturday, South Africa outplayed Mauritius 3-0. Guinea-Bissau and Mali drew 1-1. Mozambique overpowered Seychelles 5-1. Uganda beat Tanzania 3-0. Senegal beat Gambia 3-1, while Libya pipped Tunisia 1-0 on Friday. Today, Monday, Guinea play Liberia. In volleyball, defending champions Kenya beat Algeria 25-17, 25-21, and 25-20 to retain the Africa Women's Nations Volleyball Championship title in Nairobi, Kenya on Saturday. Earlier on, Cameroon edged Senegal 25-19, 23-25, 14-25, 25-13, and 17-15 to clinch the bronze medal. Tunisia is fifth, followed by Morocco, Mauritius, and Botswana. Consequently, Kenya and Algeria will represent Africa at the World Women's Volleyball Championships. In athletics, Kenyan Mary Keitani clocked 1 hour, 6 minutes, and 38 seconds to win the women's race at the Matonik Olomouc Half Marathon in the Czech Republic on Saturday. Her winning time is a new course record and the fourth quickest time in the world this year. Little-known Kenyan Josphat Kiptis won the men's event in 1 hour and 21 seconds. In rugby, hosts Uganda pipped Kenya 30-25 to win the men's Elgon Cup by a narrow 47-45 aggregate in Kampala on Saturday. In women's contest, Kenya edged Uganda 7-6 to pip their hosts 12-11 on aggregate. Finally, the Confederation of African Rugby 1C men's tournament starts in Lusaka, Zambia today, Monday. The week-long round-robin contest features Cameroon, Morocco, Nigeria, and Zambia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
And thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, June 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Button, Washington, hoping that you will make this week a very, very productive one.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.